Now, U.S. Federal Reserve officials have said they will begin running off their $4.5 trillion balance sheet, quote, relatively soon. At the same time, the central bank, as expected, left its benchmark interest rate unchanged as policymakers assess moves towards their inflation goal or lack of those moves.
Now, of course, Facebook doesn't break out Instagram revenue, but as far as we can tell, it is contributing meaningfully to the bottom line. eMarketer estimates that Instagram will bring in $3.92 billion in ad revenue this year. That's about four times as much as Snapchat altogether. We're hoping for some more color on the earnings call about how Instagram and some of these other platforms are contributing.
The president was pretty clear in his tweet that will not accept or allow a transgender individual to serve in any capacity.
The president's expressed concern since this Obama policy came into effect, but he's also voiced that this is a very expensive and disruptive policy, and based on consultation that he's had with his national security team, came to the conclusion that it erodes military readiness and unit cohesion, and made the decision based on that.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's July 27th, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day, as we have lots to talk about on the show this morning. A little bit later on, we'll wrap up the Federal Reserve policy meeting from yesterday. No interest rate hike, but there is a change in monetary policy coming. We'll tell you what the Federal Reserve has decided to do and what they're on track to do with Greg McBride from Bankrate.com. He'll be with us later in the program. We'll have our thought leader conversation in just a moment. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank market desk this morning, Dow futures are pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street, up about 25 points this morning. NASDAQ futures are higher. S&P futures are higher as well. As we look around the globe this morning, markets generally are doing well in Japan and in Hong Kong. Markets are generally higher in Hong Kong. We're seeing markets up almost a full percent, 190 points. We're also seeing markets generally in Europe higher as well, with the exception of the DAX in Germany. The FTSE's up just a little bit this morning, and in Germany, in France this morning, markets are up just a little bit as well. Back in this country and around the globe, we're watching oil, $48.83 a barrel this morning. Gold and silver are trading a little bit higher as well. Some news that we're watching for you, of course, the big announcement for our region yesterday, the Foxconn announcement. Foxconn is announcing it's going to build a $10 billion factory in Wisconsin that could initially create 3,000 jobs, could be one of the largest economic development projects in Wisconsin history. Of course, it has an impact for all of the Midwest, including Illinois and neighboring states, because of all the jobs that we're creating and because of the technical nature of some of these jobs, they'll have to pull from near the metropolitan area here in Chicago. It's likely to see that happening as this moves along. We still don't know the exact location of the plant, but it has still been announced that Foxconn, again, the maker of the iPhone, glass screens and other components for the iPhone, coming to Wisconsin. Amazon plans to make about 1,000 job offers in just one day as it holds a giant job fair next week at nearly a dozen warehouses across the United States. And as we mentioned yesterday, Federal Reserve keeping a key interest rate unchanged at a time when inflation remains persistently low, signaling that it's going to edge closer to shrinking its bond holdings, a step that would likely boost long-term borrowing rates, including mortgages. Our thought leader conversation this morning with Associated Bank focusing on downtown Chicago office vacancies rising to a two-year high during the second quarter as a new space flooded the market. In with us this morning is Greg Warsick. He's the SVP and Senior Regional Manager for Commercial Real Estate at Associated Bank. And we're happy to have him here this morning. Greg, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Thanks, Steve.
Good to see you. Because, you know, we've the last couple of days, it seems, the last couple of weeks, we're seeing all kinds of announcements for new buildings going up. A lot of it is office space, new office space. What's going on?
I think to some extent there's a certain level of the pent-up demand that, you know, as we came out of the downturn, there wasn't a whole lot of construction for quite some time. And now we just recently had a couple of million square foot buildings deliver that are right in the West Loop, really close to the train. They're beautifully designed buildings, one at 444 West Lake, which is the Heinz building, and then at 150 North Riverside, which is the Riverside building. And they're both beautiful buildings. They leased up very well at very high rents, and it was a lot of tenants looking to move into more efficient buildings, better locations near the train, near the freeway. You know, the very efficient buildings from an operating standpoint, so their total costs will be less. And frankly, one of the big trends that we're seeing is, you know, when people move, they're moving from, say, 400,000 square feet into 250,000 square feet. So their net cost is about the same and or could be going down, and they're getting a nicer building.
Now, how does that work? I mean, it would seem like if you worked in a place like that, you'd be like, okay, I'm going to have to be really close to my cube mate now. If you're sizing down, that's going to be a kind of a tight fit.
That's the other big change that we're seeing, and it's a big impact right now on office. And from a lending perspective, I'm really trying to figure out the impact of that, because they're going to more communal space. More companies are encouraging people to work from home, full time or part time. There's less dedicated office spaces. Many are going to that concept where you come in and you grab a space. Nothing's dedicated anymore, and it allows companies, especially where the employees can, they travel or they can work from home, to have less office space. It's a big chunk of cost for a lot of companies.
Let's talk about some of the stats behind what's going on with office space, beginning first with vacancies, because we've seen a big jump in those.
Honestly, that really wasn't a surprise to anybody. When you bring, you know, just those two buildings, 2 million square feet online, all those tenants came from somewhere else. And right now those buildings are being finished up. They're north of 80-85% leased right now. So there's a little bit of vacancy left there. But all the vacancy that's being left behind from those tenants moving to these new buildings is creating that spike in vacancy. Plus, what I alluded to earlier, a lot of those tenants are coming from space where they might have had 400,000 or 500,000 square feet, or pick a number, and it's going down to 250,000-300,000. So, all those components add to that vacancy rise, which frankly none of the brokers are surprised to see. And I think that trend's going to continue because there's more under construction right now.
So, 12.3% was one of the figures I saw. About 12%, is that historically high, or how does it rank in with some of previous years?
You know, it got down into like 10 or 11%, and now it's come back up to 12. You know, relative to suburban, which is, you know, 20-25%, depending on what submarket, it's still not bad. You know, I expect some of that space that's been left behind will ultimately lease, but I, you know, these new buildings are driving the higher rent. So that was one of the other interesting statistics, is despite vacancies going up, rental rates are going up, and that's because these new buildings, the two new buildings, are getting top of the market rates. So it's kind of skewing that number despite vacancies going up.
When you talk about the rates going up, what are we seeing in terms of numbers there?
I didn't think some of the numbers were attainable, but we're hearing, you know, $32 to $40 a square foot, depending on what you know, what floor you're on. Some of the penthouse units are $40 a square foot. And then you throw in operating expenses and you know, CAM and real estate taxes, and that's a pretty significant number.
And if they're getting those rates, that must speak highly of the property. Back to that issue of it being new. Unique space, that sort of thing.
Yeah, these are very notable projects that are winning awards. They're very efficient. They're beautifully designed, high amenity space, very unique experiences for the employees and for clients. And so when people say, you know, this is the building I'm in, there's cachet to it for sure.
Monitoring commercial space, what are we looking at too over by the McDonald's building that's going to go in, the McDonald's headquarters? We've seen some rumblings there that we might see some pop-ups over there as well.
Yeah, I think we're in the early innings over in Fulton Market. I think that because of Google and McDonald's, now you're seeing a lot of announced office buildings. There's at least three or four more others that are in the planning stage that look like they're going to go. There's a lot of apartments that have been delivered and are planned for that area. So the Fulton Market West Loop area is going to continue to see a lot of activity, I think, in the next 2 to 3 years.
With the commercial real estate space going up and people moving here and there, what are the effects, the impacts with related sort of spaces? Are we seeing more food places go in? Are we seeing plans for any more shopping to go along with all of these offices that might be coming?
Well, I know in Fulton Market, that's one area where they're watching the retail very closely. There's the expectation that, you know, you have all those office users come in, and there's always been a little bit of condo activity in that area, but you're seeing a real uptick in the apartments, people wanting to capture all the workers that are going to be there. I think that market is terrific from a restaurant standpoint, but from a retail, service retail standpoint, there hasn't been a lot of activity. I'm surprised there hasn't been more. Most of the retail has been on Randolph. The expectation is that the retail will ultimately jump to Fulton. It hasn't yet, but a lot of people are betting it's just a matter of time.
Back to the spaces that are being left empty, you mentioned earlier that as some of the companies move into these nicer spaces, that other space that they're leaving is empty. What are the challenges in getting that filled?
I talked to a few brokers, and they said that is becoming a bigger challenge because a lot of the space that's being left is further east. Some of the space hasn't been updated in a long time, so there's some pretty big capital investments that are needed to update not only the space but maybe the common areas. So it's going to be a challenge really backfilling that space. You see all the activity of suburban companies moving downtown, they're not moving really east. They're more moving to the west, or they're moving to the, you know, to the River North area. So there's areas within the Central Business District that I think are going to be a challenge for office. I think you're going to see some pretty significant vacancy levels for Central Business District.
Do you think that opens up some unique opportunities for maybe bargain rack rentals in those areas?
It could. I think there might be some softness in the market where landlords might be forced to concede on rents, offer some big tenant improvement packages to get people to move in and sign leases. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
It's interesting that you mentioned earlier that some of these new spaces are being designed for people that are working from home, and that with that in mind. And in other parts of the country, we're seeing some companies back off from that. They're pulling their employees back in after trying these experiences. Is there a double-edged sword with doing some of this planning for that?
Yeah, I think there is. We've heard mixed results from clients and brokers where they're seeing some tenants saying that, you know, where they encourage that type of operation where maybe there's a slip in productivity, a lack of collaboration. It's very difficult, even with Skype, to have that same level of engagement. Any office you go into, you know, you like to encourage that teamwork, and it just doesn't happen when everybody's sitting at home, you know, in their slippers working at their own home desk.
It's interesting because at the end of last year when we were doing our predictions for this year, we talked about how virtual reality would become a big marketing tool. And it's interesting to see the Belgravia Group and a photograph here in one of their publications recently of there they are with the VR goggles marketing their properties. Are you seeing more of this?
Yeah, I think a lot of our clients like Belgravia are trying to figure out ways to use this new technology to advance their business. And, you know, just that virtual reality in that particular article was trying to pre-sell condo units. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Belgravia has a beautiful project that they're doing near the Trump Plaza, and they're $1 million-plus units, and they're trying to pre-sell the units. And getting people to sign a contract for a unit at that price point is a challenge. And so whatever you can do to help a buyer visualize what they're buying, is critical. It went from being brochures to mocking up units, which people still do, to sending up drones to take pictures So they can see what their view would look like from a certain floor. Belgravia has now taken the technology to another level and has created virtual reality for their potential buyers to really feel and see and experience through virtual reality what their unit would look like, including the views, the finishes, different color paint. Yeah. So it's fascinating.
Yeah, and some of it is so advanced, too, that you can actually walk through the floor plan of a unit,
exactly.
Which seems to be like science fiction almost.
It really is, but it's upon us. I mean, it's and you got to embrace it because it's a terrific way to help advance your business in commercial real estate.
Some of the other tools too that you mentioned, the drone part of this, but that's going to be a big one. I think even bigger than we probably imagine, because you mentioned how you imagine a building that's not up yet, but you want to see what your view of the city is going to be like, or the view of whatever, and the drone seems to be the easiest way to do that.
Yeah, a lot of our clients use it extensively, especially, you know, for any ground-up construction, and it's not just condos. It's apartments, office. They're all looking, you know, to get that information so they can plug it into some type of virtual reality for their potential tenants.
On the Opening Bell recently did a segment on tiny homes, where people are abandoning their big homes and moving into tiny homes, maybe not so much here in Chicago. But people have a lot of stuff, and they have nowhere to put it. Is this why we're seeing a boom in self-storage in the area, the Midwest?
I think self-storage is just now finally getting some press, quite honestly. This is a business that we have enjoyed lending to for over 20 years. I like the business quite a bit. It's been very resilient. In good times and bad, it's performed extremely well. People, no matter what, put their stuff into these storage units, and it's a lot of different things are driving the business. And we have some clients here in Chicago that really do a terrific job locally, regionally, and nationally with the execution of the storage business. And a lot of it is the demographics. It's the downsizing, as you mentioned. You know, mom and dad sell the big house. They don't want to give the furniture away because the kids might want it someday. Mm-hmm. Family heirlooms, so they put it in storage. The kids going out, what are they renting these days? Small apartments, no storage. They get a small storage, you know, unit to put all their stuff in, or even just simply people cleaning out their garages.
And, you know, the technology, too, is impacting this, I think, a little, too. Some of these storage facilities, they're state-of-the-art. When I say state-of-the-art, there's a TV show that I won't say the name of the TV show, but it's about this guy that lives in his storage facility because it's so nice. Some of these places are pretty cool.
Yeah, they're really they're beautiful, and they're climate-controlled. They're carpeted, well-lit. There's, you know, music going, and they're catering. They've found that there's, you know, quite a bit of women that rent these things, and so they want them to be safe, well-lit, clean. If you walk through some of these, you will see people sitting in their units going through boxes. The one thing that surprised me were the number of small businesses that operate out of storage lockers, because their merchandise can be delivered to the storage facility, who encourages that. Mm-hmm. It gets put into their locker. They come in, they redistribute it, and send it back out. So there's a lot of little pieces to this that people don't realize that's really driving this business.
So maybe it's not too far-fetched to think of putting a couch and a big screen TV in one of these things and calling it home.
There you go, Steve. Man cave.
Yeah. Greg, good to see you, and we'll see you again next month.
All right. Sounds good.
Greg Worsick is the Senior Vice President and Senior Regional Manager of Commercial Real Estate in the Chicago market. It's our Thought Leader Conversation. Remember, you can hear past conversations at WGNRadio.com on the Opening Bell page, and you can follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter. We'll be having another Thought Leader Conversation next Thursday right here on the program.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Glad you're here for our Thursday edition of 540 now here on WGN. And yesterday, the Federal Reserve decided to keep its key interest rate unchanged at a time when inflation remains persistently low, but the Fed is signaling it's edging closer to gradually shrinking its bond holdings. Greg McBride is a chief financial analyst at Bankrate.com, and he's with us this morning. Good morning, Greg. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Well, what was the headline here from the meeting? Is inflation the word of the day?
Yeah, it definitely has their attention. You know, we've seen a little bit more concern from some of the Fed speeches lately about inflation running persistently below that 2% mark. I think the statement kind of made that clear yesterday. And the reality of it is, Steve, the Fed's going to have a difficult time raising interest rates again until inflation starts moving toward 2% rather than away from it. So don't expect any hikes in short-term rates in the near future. I think the likelihood is if we get another one this year, it's probably not going to be until well into the fourth quarter, likely December. In the meantime, they're going to focus on kicking off that program to pare down those bond holdings.
Yeah, well, I want to get into that in a minute, but let's talk a little bit more about the data. From every angle, it looks as it's soft. Describe, first of all, what we mean by soft and why that's a concern for the economy.
Well, we've had a run of really soft economic data across the board, in terms of, retail sales in particular. 70% of our economic output is consumer spending. So, when we saw softness in consumer, retail spending, that was a real indicator that, maybe the consumer was tightening the pocketbook. We have seen a little bit of a rebound there. Business investment, has also rebounded and is looking okay. But the one area that hasn't rebounded are those inflation numbers. They keep ticking lower. And, the Fed has kind of cited excuses almost every year as, well, last year it was oil prices, but that's temporary, and then inflation will bounce back. And then this year, inflation didn't bounce back, and it's like, well, it's because wireless plans are getting cheaper. And, it's a little bit like, those companies that have an extraordinary earnings charge every single quarter. We've always seemed to have something that's keeping inflation at this low level. I think it's time that the Fed realizes that, maybe there's a bigger systemic problem here with the aging population, the abysmally low productivity growth. I think there are factors at play that are holding inflation at those low levels.
What would you say those are? Because normally what would we see if the economy and all of these things were moving in areas that they should or in ways that they should?
Well, if you had, putting to those two factors, the aging population, because of demographics, as people get older, they tend to spend less. So, there's less pressure, spending pressure going on there, less pushing prices higher in that regard. And then also productivity growth in the economy is pitifully low right now. That makes it very difficult for employers to raise wages. And so that higher wages is something which sparks people to spend more money. One of the biggest reasons people tell us they're not spending more money is that they don't see more money in the paycheck.
Yeah, and in states, states like Illinois, where we've just put in effect a new income tax, a really big income tax hike, that paycheck is even getting smaller. There's also the danger here that, we see that inflation going in the wrong direction. What would we see if it started falling even further?
Well, low inflation to you, me, and everybody listening, it sounds great. But the concern that the central bank has about low inflation is if it keeps moving lower, then you get into a situation where you have to worry about what's called deflation, where actually price levels actually decline. Now, to the ear, that sounds great, but it's really an economic death spiral. That's something that Japan has really had to contend with for the better part of the last quarter century with declining price levels. Nobody spends money today if they think something's going to be cheaper tomorrow.
The other part of our conversation here is back to the balance sheet. The Fed has always had this on hand to be sort of the lender of last resort, as sometimes they're described. What is the danger in starting to unfold this and get rid of some of this stuff now?
Well, we're talking about some really big numbers. At the start of the financial crisis, the Fed's balance sheet was about $750 billion. Today, it's $4.5 trillion. And it mushroomed in the years following the financial crisis when they were buying government-backed bonds and then eventually mortgage-backed bonds in an effort to drive down long-term interest rates. Now, that worked. Mortgage rates at this point are still around 4%. It also incentivized investors to go into riskier assets. So, real estate prices, you see the continued rebound we've seen there. Look at the stock market at record highs. So, check both of those boxes. It worked. It drove down long-term rates. It pushed up asset prices. The concern is, okay, if they start letting these holdings run off, are we going to see the opposite effect? Will we see an increase in long-term interest rates? Will we see a ceiling for real estate prices? Will we see an increased level of volatility and some sharp drops in the stock market that we haven't seen in a few years? I think those are all fair considerations. once this program kicks off and builds some momentum. They're going to tiptoe through it the first year. I think it's really years two and three, Steve, where we really have to worry, because at that point, the aggregate amount they've run off starts to move north of that $1 trillion mark. So when you downsize a balance sheet from $4.5 trillion down to $3.5 or $3 trillion, I think that's the point where you have to start worrying about unintended consequences.
Yeah, and you mentioned the long-term rates there. That would include things like mortgages, and folks still might be able to take advantage of some of these still historically low mortgage rates if we're not going to see another rate hike in, you know, until maybe December or even beyond. Would you suggest maybe they should look into that?
Well, mortgage rates are really low. I mean, that's one of the sort of byproducts that we talked about, low inflation. Low inflation and slow economic growth are really the things that have kept a lid on mortgage rates. So even though the Fed has raised short-term interest rates a total of four times in the last 18 months or so, mortgage rates are basically unchanged because of that persistent backdrop of slow economic growth and low inflation. So mortgage rates are not going to be an impediment to a well-qualified home buyer. But you've got to get your financial house in order before you go out and buy a house. So you don't go out and, you know, buy a house before you're fully ready any more than you get married because of a sale at the bridal shop. So, you know, pay down your debt, build up savings. I think that's really the most important point. Establish a track record of saving before you buy a house. If you don't figure it out before you buy a house, you're not going to figure it out after you buy a house.
And, Greg, that cleaning up your financial house is getting harder for people who have credit cards. I know Bankrate's latest survey shows those credit card interest rates are rising to one of the highest levels in a while.
Yeah, they certainly are. I mean, you know, the Fed has raised that benchmark interest rate four times over the last year and a half, and the prime rate, which is the primary benchmark for most credit cards, has continued to march higher in step with that. So, yes, we do see issuers continuing to bump up credit card rates, and you know, those that are most susceptible here are consumers that have marginal credit quality, because not only have the rates moved higher, but we're also seeing credit start to tighten a little bit for consumers that have a history of delinquencies and defaults. The consumer who's got pristine credit, they are still in the driver's seat. There's still a lot of 0% and other low rate offers out there that you can transfer that balance to and give yourself a window of opportunity to get it paid off once and for all.
Greg, good to chat with you as always. Thanks for being with us here on the Opening Bell.
Always a pleasure, Steve. Thank you.
Greg McBride is a chief financial analyst at Bankrate.com. You can follow him on Twitter at BankrateGreg.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street later on this morning, up 27 points. NASDAQ futures now up 31. Gold and silver are trading higher this morning as well. Now the latest on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Weather continues to be the main factor in the grain trade across the country. Wheat futures firmed higher today, with the Minneapolis spring wheat contracts posting the biggest gains because of reports from a crop tour in North Dakota, confirming that drought in the northern plains severely crimped the harvest potential. And in the coming weeks, the weather forecast in the U.S. will become increasingly more important for the market. So at the end of the trading day yesterday, we saw September corn up 3¾ cents, 386 a bushel. November soybeans up 7½ cents at ¼ cent above $10 a bushel. And Minneapolis Grain Exchange September spring wheat up 12½ cents at $7.30 a bushel. Turning to livestock trade, Chicago Mercantile Exchange yesterday, the live cattle contracts cut some recent losses, helped by bargain buying today. August cattle up $1.12 a pound at $114.30. Oh, and yesterday, a small number of cash cattle in Nebraska brought $117 per hundredweight. Technical buying and yesterday morning's firmer wholesale pork values led by a record high $215.11 per hundredweight for frozen pork bellies supported the lean hog contracts, with August up 55 cents for the day. And that's what happened in the marketplace. In the agribusiness marketplace yesterday, the AGCO company announced the fact that it had signed an agreement to acquire the Climate Corporation, a subsidiary of Monsanto. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, July 27th. The Labor Department releases weekly jobless claims this morning. The Commerce Department releases durable goods for June. Freddie Mac has weekly mortgage rates. It's a big day for second quarter earnings. Among those companies reporting today, United Parcel Service, Twitter, Comcast, Altria Group, Southwest Airlines, and in London, pharmaceutical giant GSK, and also in London, oil giant Royal Dutch Shell reporting second quarter earnings. Also today, Starbucks and Amazon reporting earnings after the market closes. The House Financial Services Committee holds a hearing on the state of international financial system. That'll begin this morning with testimony expected there from Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin. Also today, according to a new survey being released by CareerBuilder.com, 3 in 5 workers say traditional 8 hours working day is a thing of the past. The company looked at the nation's largest cities. For instance, in Washington, D.C., 73% of workers think the traditional 9-to-5 working day is a thing of the past. That compared to 68% in Boston and Los Angeles, 66% in New York. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, July 27th.